I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Here's a question I've been getting everywhere, and I literally mean everywhere. At events, on panels, in the hallways after I speak somewhere, people pull me aside and they ask me, Jason, what is OpenClaw? And OpenClaw has a few different names. Sometimes it's been called Maltbot, sometimes Claudebot. It has more names than, I don't know, a rapper with a complicated past. But whatever you decide to call it, people can feel like there's something different about it, something special about it. Like AI has finally found that thing that we've been waiting for. So today I'm sitting down with Marcus Penny, VP of Technology at Brucebolt, and also the founder of Takabo, and one of the people I know who's actually built real things with this. So let's get into it. But first, a note from our sponsors. The path to growth shouldn't stop at the border. The World Trade Center Institute provides the connections, knowledge, and global network Maryland's most ambitious leaders need to scale. From executive development to international trade, we help our region's businesses thrive on the world stage. Start your global journey at WTCI.org. This week, NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, announced an enterprise version of OpenClaw called NemoClaw. And someone described it perfectly. It's like Mac and Windows are the operating system that runs on your computer, but OpenClaw is the operating system for personal AI. When NVIDIA decides that this is a thing that they should start to build infrastructure around, then you start to realize that maybe this isn't a hobby project anymore, and it's something that we have to keep an eye out for. Huang went as far as to say that he's seeing a future of a GAS. And if you're wondering, what is a GAS? This idea of agents as a service that may be the future of SaaS platforms running with something like NemoClaw, OpenClaw. And NVIDIA isn't the only company who's noticing OpenClaw. Perplexity, the folks behind the AI-powered search engine, also announced something called Personal Computer. It runs on a dedicated machine, and it can work around the clock doing tasks, and it gives your AI agents access to your local files and apps, but in a way that's supposed to be a little bit more secure. Their pitch is essentially a safer version and a more polished version of OpenClaw than what OpenClaw is doing. For hobbyists trying to run all these things, the computer of choice right now is a Mac Mini, and people are buying these things like hotcakes. They're getting as many of them as they can, and they're stacking these up and running OpenClaw locally on clusters so they can have data in their own environments and have more control. So, as always, links are in the show notes, and let's get into it with Marcus. Marcus Penny is the kind of technologist I love having on the show because he, like me, is playing with early technology that's on the frontier and experimenting with tools that many of us have not used. Marcus is the VP of Technology and Digital Services at Brucebolt, a premium sporting goods brand, and the founder of Takabo, a boutique digital consulting firm focused on commerce, operations, and AI-enabled systems. When Marcus and I got first introduced by a mutual friend, the three of us ended up talking for hours about this thing called OpenClaw, or Claudebot, and what it is. And I couldn't think of anyone better to dig into this whole thing about OpenClaw and the fascination that people are having with it. So, Marcus, welcome to Thoughts on Tech and Things.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Jason. Glad to be here.
So, Marcus, everywhere I go, and people know that I'm deeply embedded in this AI world, somebody walks up to me and is like, have you used OpenClaw? What do you think about OpenClaw? Sometimes they say Clawbot, sometimes they say Maltbot. And I'm hoping that we can just start off by just you telling us, what is this OpenClaw thing, this phenomenon, like in plain English, that's just taking over the world?
Yeah, sure. So starting off with caveat, I've been using it for 4 weeks.
Well, it's what, existed for 6 weeks, maybe eight?
I think it came out in November, late 2025. But I saw a couple of articles on it and thought, oh, you know, having a persistent AI agent might be helpful because I'm using AI a lot. And I always have to start off with every conversation saying, hey, do you remember or do you have access or can you see this file? So having something that I didn't have to start off with that and just be able to continue each day, I thought would be very helpful. So, yeah, I've been on this journey for about 4 weeks.
So you mentioned this word agent. And I think in previous episodes of the show, I've talked about agent or agentic AI, where agents are AI that can do stuff for you without a human in the loop, right?
Right.
Let me give you an example. I want tickets to go fly someplace, and I say, go get me tickets, and this AI can complete the task. And this is something that we have, like, these browsers like Comet that can do, but OpenClaw takes this to a whole nother place.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll tell you, from the time I started till where we are today, even Claude, Cowork, and Codex app, like, this new technology has come out over the last couple of weeks that's absolutely amazing. So with OpenClaw, I started with just my email, like, hey, help me manage my email. So I have an email account that I've had for 20 years. So there's about 40,000 unread messages in it. And I'm like, I will never read those messages. I may never even delete them. I may never look at them. They're just there. So I thought, security is always concerned with any of this technology. So I'm like, all right, well, I don't want to give it access to anything dealing with my work just yet. I just want it to just work with me. And maybe it can be a personal assistant. So I gave it access to my inbox. And I started off with just saying, hey, put a label on these emails for me. And it iterated with me. We created some cron jobs, and it was going through and identifying where things should go. But I didn't have to tell it a lot. I could just say, hey, here's what I'm trying to do, run. And it started off amazing.
Just to put that in perspective, right now with, say, ChatGPT or Claude, if you're using Anthropic's Claude, I could write a prompt to say, help me with this email. Or I could give it a copy of email and say, how should I respond to this email? But the agentic part here is that you're giving it credentials to your email account.
Right.
And you're saying, just go at it. In a cron job, which means just like a, I think actually the word that's used by OpenClaw is a heartbeat, right? That it's a job that it can do every few minutes. So it, you know, maybe does a batch here and then a batch there.
That's exactly right. I had it start with 15-minute job and then increase that to 2 hours and 4 hours. And now it runs like every 12 hours or so. But
So did it catch up?
It caught up. How's
your email? Do you still have email?
So I'm trying to get to a point where I trust that it will tell me the emails that I need to read and put the other ones where I don't need to read. Like, I don't even need to pay attention, right? So I get a lot of emails, you know, think about it, 20 years having the same email address. You get all kinds of emails. But I also get emails from my school, my kid's school. And some of that I want to see, some of it I don't. My kid's soccer team, things that I actually care about, subscriptions that I care about. But then there's a lot of noise. And what I was trying to do is to get it to weed out the noise so that I could just focus on the things that I really cared about.
One of the things that I'd like to say about AI is that AI is non-deterministic, which makes it not necessarily good for automation, right? Because if you think automation, it's do the same thing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But when you think about non-deterministic tasks, it's like reading an email and saying, oh, this soccer message is for one of your kids, put this over in this folder. Oh, this is a message that needs to be responded to. These are things that we typically connect with human thought and responsibility, which is the thing that I think makes tools like this so amazing. It's almost like saying, instead of hiring a personal assistant to go through 40,000 emails, you've hired a much cheaper solution to go and do that task.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love about this technology is you can move so fast and you can learn and improve along the way. Whereas before, it's always like, all right, you got to think through everything. You got to make sure you're going to make some of the mistakes, but you want to reduce the number of mistakes that you make. With this technology, I set the guardrails of what I don't want it to do and what I want it to do. And I just work with it and figure out where we want to get to. But it just talking to it. So I dictate a lot. You know, I just put my headsets on and just talk through what I want. And it'll have a conversation with me. And then it'll say, okay, I got it. And then it'll run.
that's amazing. So one of the things that I think makes OpenClaw more than a chatbot also is these things called skills. They're just like you mentioned email, this is a thing that lets you tap into a whole lot of different services and things that are there, right? There's even a marketplace called ClawHub where you can go and you can find a skill and you can add that. So are you experimenting with these different skills?
I am. So the ones that I'm using right now are, so I'm connected with Slack, so I can interact with it. So even right now, I can pick up my phone and send it a message and ask it to do something for me. I'm using, it's connected with Google, so it has access to my email, which I mentioned, and even Drive. So it doesn't have access to like my work stuff, but it has access to all my personal stuff. And I use Notion. And with all my side projects, I always felt like, oh, I have to have Jira or I have to have Notion. I got to keep all these notes. I have to do all this. Now I'll ask OpenClaw to update my database. I'll ask it to add more items. So I have several databases that I keep. I will keep tasks that are work-related, even though I won't give it access to my work stuff. And I'll just say, hey, add these items to my database or update these items or this is now closed or add this additional information to this item in the database, and they'll take care of it for me.
I think that's the thing that's so important here is context, right? When I do workshops and I teach people about AI, one of the things that I consistently say is context is so important. And context is important because you need an AI model to understand the context that you're talking about things. What email, what document, connect to my HubSpot or Salesforce CRM, or go get this analytics data from this other thing. And so like the way that you're using skills, it can automatically take all these things from different pieces and bring them together to do things in a way that we think of humans as doing.
Right. So I'll tell you one more thing. Since I've started on this AI journey, and I've been on it for like 13 or 14 months now, I've probably started 14 different projects, so applications that I've been building. And yeah. I think I've finished two. So the next phase of OpenClaw with me is to actually orchestrate development for me. And I'm blown away by it. So now I tend to work with Claude Cowork and build out specs. And I'll save the specs to a repository that I have in GitHub. And OpenClaw has access. I've given it token access to my GitHub applications. And whenever I'm thinking through something or I just want it to continue building, I just send a message over Slack and say, hey, let's continue building this project. So I don't even have to tell it what folder to go to. I can just mention the project and it knows how to get to it.
That's awesome. And I should probably say this just to be explicit about it. The thing that makes OpenClaw very amazing is that you're actually still using ChatGPT or Claude or Llama or whatever AI model you want to do these things. It's more like the framework around it.
Right.
So you can still tap into Claude and you're having a conversation with Claude and you're having Claude's memory and other things, but then Claude now has access to skills and tools that it might not have had available before this that you can Slack or I know a lot of people use WhatsApp to tell it to do things. And then it goes off and builds applications. So the other thing that I think sets OpenClaw separate from just any other AI tool out there, or just ChatGPT or Claude, is the heartbeat, that cron job, and that it can be proactive. Like our relationship with a lot of these things is we tell it to do something, it does it, and then if there's something that needed to happen, you come back and you're like, oh, you've just been sitting there waiting for my feedback, right?
Right.
But this is different. This is like a two-way relationship. It can come back and ask you for things or tell you things or remember things?
Yeah. So with my inbox and with the activities that I have it doing with my inbox and my calendars, it will reach out to me on Slack and say, this is done, or hey, you should look at this, which is really cool because up until now, all of my experience has been I am the trigger. I am the thing that tells the agents or GPTs or LLMs, like, hey, I need this thing, and then it gives me a response. Now I'll get proactive messages. Yeah, so I'm actually excited about that potential and what it could mean for the future, especially when you start looking at proactive insights on things like with work. Here are a bunch of data, and I've already gone through the data, and here's what you need to know proactively without me reaching out.
That proactive nature is something that I think is really powerful because you say you have an agent that you've told to go and look at your analytics or your statistics or is monitoring your supply chain, right? Right. Well, when it sees your supply chain and it sees that something has happened or something has changed, well, then it can actually act on that and maybe do something or do the research that it needs to. And it comes back to you and it's like, now I need to find a problem, but I have some solutions for you, which is a very different way to think about your relationship with your AI.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think about e-commerce and you know, the logistics involved with e-commerce. The orders are coming in, orders are going out. But Happy Path isn't just, hey, I placed an order and I received it. It's, I wanted an exchange, or I wanted a return, or there's a storm. Where's my order? I think the number one call that call centers get is, where's my order? So especially now in these Amazon days where everyone's expecting it same day or within 2 days. But to have something that will look at your data and say, hey, we have issues here. There are 10 orders you need to look at, or 10 orders that we need someone to do something with. I don't think we've ever had anything like that, especially at this price point.
You used these words, AI orchestration, earlier. And AI orchestration means an AI controlling other AI or potentially giving messages to humans. And that idea that, hey, here's a supplier who sent something, there was a storm, and now, and actually this is the thing that we talked about, right? There's thousands of things that didn't make it, and you can now have not only an AI who understands this issue, but can spin up sub-agents that can go through and help tackle this. This was a real problem, right?
Yeah, yeah, this was an actual problem. I won't get into too much detail, but definitely had an issue where orders were going to be late, and we needed them to get there before Christmas. And we had to go through and find the orders and do the replacements. And we were able to leverage the technology to help identify those orders and replace the orders and have happy customers. So, you know, missing orders, we can always deal with insurance later, but making sure that our customers are happy is number one.
So security is a huge, huge, huge piece of this. The thing that is the fear, and I'll share some examples of this in the show notes of people who are using OpenClaw, is it has access. And this is both like a requirement and a design flaw at the same time. I mean, when we say that it has access, when you give it access to email, it has access to your email. It right. can send email on your behalf. It can delete your email. There's a article that I'll link to in the show notes about a employee at Meta, and OpenClaw went in and just deleted all her email. you know, for whatever reason, you know, there are many other examples of cases like that. Does a cron job. This means that it has access to your computer. It can run applications. It can do things. It can potentially delete your photos. But it, getting to the question part here is that that's also what makes it amazing, right?
Right. Yeah. So security is a major concern, especially with open source. There are people looking, people testing, people helping, but it's always after the fact. It's not really proactive. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say that. There are some proactive parts of it. But my approach to this was, I'm only going to give it access for what I think it could do maliciously and not cause too much damage. So my thought here was, I bought a Mac Mini. I put it on the Mac Mini. I gave it full access. But that Mac Mini only has access to what I wanted to have access, right? So yes, you can reach it through Slack, but even on my network, there's only one other computer that can get to it. And the access that I gave it, it's very limited. It's all my personal stuff. I did mention that it'll manage my tasks for me that I across my work-related tasks, but it doesn't have any type of PII. You know, it doesn't have any type of credentials that has access to my work stuff. It's just, it's no different than me like writing on a piece of paper or just taking notes and stuff. But yeah, I think that's the biggest concern for people, is that if you give it too much access, it can do too much, even though it's amazing, you know, end up screwing you.
Well, this is also the thing that makes me wonder how Siri or Google Assistant or any of these other like assistants that we have right now, how do they take this next step? It, by design, companies like OpenAI and Anthropic, who makes Claude, have restricted what these things do to protect us. Mm-hmm. So I may have access to HubSpot or access to email, but it can't do this thing. It only read email. It can't send email. Or it can tell you about a customer, but it can't add a new customer. It can't delete customers. And this has been, you know, to protect us from ourselves, or writing a prompt that's bad that accidentally, you know, gets, you know, interpreted in a way that deletes all your stuff. But what the OpenClaw world has kind of shown us is that, man, do I wish that I could just go out and take some risk and do things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny story is, when I was setting it up, you know, you have to give it credentials and you have to tell it what it can do and what it can't do. And I was setting up environment variables with security keys, and I accidentally pasted one in the prompt to it, and it said, it slapped me on the wrist. It said, don't ever do that again. You should consider this compromised, delete it, and go create another one. So I was happy to see that, because I didn't even realize I was moving so fast and I was you know, doing a bunch of things at one time. And I was pleasantly surprised that it caught that and then told me.
So the thing that's also, I think, very interesting about OpenClaw is you mentioned also Claude Code and Claude Cowork and Codex a lot earlier. And these are vibe coding tools. Cowork is a little bit of a different thing, but Claude Code as well as OpenAI's ChatGPT Codex are tools that you can use to develop applications and have AI do it. And OpenClaw, you know, the guy who built this thing, Peter, he's actively said that he vibe coded this platform. That, you know, it's AI making tools for AI, which is like, boom, crazy, you know, mind blow. But that's the thing that's happening. But also what I think is interesting about this moment is that because vibe coding has become so amazing, it's so hard to find out what's legitimately out there about OpenClaw. There's like 1,000 websites and 1,000 different products and all these things that are just popping up in this vibe coding movement. It makes you question what's real and what's not real.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hype too. So it's hard to know what has actually been completed versus what someone thinks could be done, right? Yeah. So, but they don't tell you the distinction. It's just like, oh, I did this thing, but did you really? So the example I gave earlier, I've started all of these projects, and a lot of that started with me writing the code and then me co-writing with agent or actually LLMs. And then I started orchestrating. So I use Codex and I use Claude Code and Gemini, all CLI, and I'll have one write out tasks or one write out specs, one do the architectural decisions and then task, et cetera, UAT, et cetera. And I started having OpenClaw do that for me, and it's doing this orchestration, and I tell it which spec to complete. It'll work with all the agents to create all the assets that I just mentioned, and then 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, I get a PR that's ready
pull
for
request.
Me to review.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get a pull request that's sitting there waiting for me, and it's amazing. It's amazing how we got to that point. So I went
Put this in perspective. Like, this is, you're talking about something that may have had, what, 3-4-person development team, or that might have taken you, you know, months to develop, and we're talking minutes, maybe an hour?
Yeah. Yeah. You can write a full app in an hour. And it may not do everything in the world, but it can complete a goal for you. And the funny thing here is, like, there are people who are going to say, well, that's, you shouldn't do that. You don't even know what the code looks like and this and that. Yeah, I will admit, I've gotten to the point where I'm not writing any code, and I rarely do some code review on this stuff. But these aren't production ready. These aren't customer facing. These are internal tools that I use or proof of concepts that I'm building. And like I mentioned earlier, it's faster to just build it and then fix it or iterate with it, right? So instead of trying to get it perfect the first time or get it right the first time, just build the foundation and then make it better.
Yeah, the speed that you can move in has changed. There's one other thing that I wanted to mention about OpenClaw is you can give it a soul. Is that right? Is it like your soul prompt? Soul prompt. It sounds like we need an Afro pick. I don't know. What is your soul or your OpenClaw soul like? Well,
first of all, I just want to mention I miss the days when I had a pick. My hair doesn't grow like that anymore. But when I first set it up, I gave it a soul. So here's you. Here's what I believe you are or your characteristics, and here's who I am, right? So I created some markdown files and gave it to it and consumed it.
Is yours a male or female? My AI agents tend to end up as Southern women. I don't know why that is.
This was the first one where I didn't ask to generate an image for yourself, but you know what? After this, I will.
Okay. Yeah. But the soul allows you to give it a personality, right?
Yeah.
It allows you to set some governance rules, like we're talking about the restrictions that you may want to put around it. For example, if it can access certain things or don't do these things or just how you want it to act and react.
Yeah, yeah. So first off, I named OpenClaw Coco. I have a cousin named Coco, and
all right.
I just switched the letters around, so OC to CO, CO, you know, Coco. And I said, you know, your name's Coco. Here's the things that we're going to be doing. Here's how I would like for you to interact with me. And I like to be asked questions. So when I ask you to do something, I would prefer you to ask a question, even though if you feel like you fully understand what I'm asking, ask clarifying questions anyway. So it will always ask at least one or two questions whenever I send it a prompt, just to clarify, because I don't want it to just guess. But yeah, I mean, my wife thinks I spend too much time on my computer as it is, working with these agents and talking to them and giving them names and images. But so I didn't want to go too far with it. But, you know, that's why I didn't have it generate an image. But
I have to ask, is your wife jealous of Coco?
Well, Coco's writing an app for her right now, so she appreciates Coco.
Okay. Yeah, so they have a good relationship.
They have a good relationship.
That's good to know. All right. So on our way out, I have one closing question for you. So when you look at your own setup and you look at the things that you're aspiring for Coco, you know, your open claw implementation to do, what are you hopeful for? Like, what do you think is V2 of this?
Oh, V2. So I feel like it'll be great if this remains open source, but, you know, with Peter Steinberger joining.
How did I not mention that? Peter Steinberger, who's the person who made OpenClaw, he's the developer of OpenClaw. He was acqui-hired by OpenAI after this big fight between OpenAI and Meta. I think Meta offered more money, but OpenAI is where he decided to go. But acqui-hire, meaning they didn't take OpenClaw. They took him. They hired him. But OpenClaw is supposed to remain open source, is my understanding. And I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, so for me, it's we're heading towards that Jarvis. Maybe we can finally have a Jarvis like Tony Stark's Jarvis. You know, so you know, I don't have to remind it. It knows all of our interactions, our previous interactions. It knows how to get to things. It's truly becoming a great personal assistant. What I'm hopeful for and what I'm excited about is not only can it remember things, but it can proactively find opportunities, find issues. Alerting is huge for me because I'm all over the place. I work many hours. I have two small children. I have a wife. I'm needed in many different places. And to have something that has my back, that's watching my calendar, watching my email, building for me, identifying opportunities, identifying issues, it's not making me lazy. It's actually accelerating me. You know, it's making me more present. I can spend more time with my kids. I can spend more time with my wife. I can spend more time with people because I have this technology in the background helping me out.
It's the thing that everyone would always say is like, I don't want AI that does my work for me. That does the fun parts for me. I want AI that's going to wash the dishes. And in a way that sounds like what you're building.
Yeah.
Well, Marcus, it was great to have you on the show. Marcus Penny is the VP of Technology and Digital Services at Bruce Bolt, and also the creator of Coco, his OpenClaw agent. And maybe next time we're gonna have to get you and Coco on the show. Maybe we can see what OpenClaw Coco thinks about you.
Well, I would love to do that. Thanks for having me, Jason.
All right, we got a plan. Thanks, Marcus. Before we go, that employee that I talked about earlier at Meta who deleted all their emails, well, she hooked OpenClaw up to her real inbox, voted to confirm before it did anything, and then watched it start planning to delete everything. She tried to stop it from her phone. She typed, "Stop OpenClaw, stop OpenClaw," in all caps and sending it a message, and it didn't work. She had to run to her computer, get there as fast as she could, and pull the plug out of the machine to stop it. Her words, "rookie mistake." Turns out an alignment researcher for AI isn't actually immune to misalignment. So when you spin up that OpenClaw instance, maybe you should ask, what's the worst that could happen, right? All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for this week. Thanks to the team at WIPR, our producers Sam Burmes-Dawes and Shania Mapson, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.